Mic check, 1, 2, 1, 2. Get it going now.
That's our new intro.
We're totally using it.
Alright, are you good to go? Are we recording?
Yeah,
we're
recording this whole
thing. Damn it. My Will Smith intro.
We'd have to have that as a little wave and just press that anytime.
That's our, we'll have a soundboard that we can just hit. This is episode 22 of The Unwind, where we talk every week about tech, games, gadgets, and geek culture. My name is Rob Steller.
I'm Sean Thomas.
And I'm Josiah Hills.
Can I just start by saying that I was a victim of the Humble Bundle this week?
It's gotten me before, too.
Well, so that's the thing. I've never actually bought one before. This is the first one. I think the first one that I purchased, they had all these different card games. So I think Magic the Gathering was not part of it. They had Dominion Online, like... I think there's at least a dozen card games on this, right? So I've been installing them on Steam.
What was it? Name your own price, or
yeah? So I ended up paying the higher one. So it was $35, and then it comes with an actual physical card game and a T-shirt too. So I was like, oh, cool. I might as well do it. It's like whatever. But this comes in the same week that Guild Wars 2 is on sale last weekend for I think $10. So I bought that. And then I found a glitch in GameStop where I was able to get Dying Light for $20. So I just went on a buying spree. But this is all given the fact that I have still yet to beat Dragon Age, and that's all that I play.
This is a common phenomenon. It is that the Steam sale effect, where people have this giant library of Steam games that they never play. If you look at my library, it's actually pretty substantial, and I've played about three of them because I bought like four Humble Bundles, each with eight games. But man, getting through that Steam backlog,
oh, it's crazy.
It's never going to happen.
So anyway, I wanted to bring the first topic of the day today, and what I wanted to talk about was what it means to actually be a nerd or a geek today. Because when we were growing up, that is not the label you wanted to have, right?
Yeah.
And it meant...
Now all the cool kids.
Yeah, like there's people... Like I see people on Instagram and walking around the streets with just a shirt that says nerd on it. And I always want to stop them
and
ask...
It's actually a Pharrell reference. I don't know.
I always want to stop them and ask them what their credentials are. Like, okay, whatever modes do you play? So let's... I just wanted to talk about this real quick. So... When we were growing up, what did it mean to be a nerd, right? It means you probably played a lot of games, but you didn't tell people that you played these games. Like, we did LAN parties, we brought our computers over to somebody's house, we hooked them up and, you know, played StarCraft and, you know, all these other games. So today, though, it's socially acceptable, I feel. Like, people openly talk about playing video games, they openly talk about... you know, liking comics and Marvel and...
Well, I think it's generational, so let me just point out that I am... What, 8 years older than you guys? 7 years older?
Something like that.
So
he's on Medicare.
Back in my day. So, you know, like people my age, I am still a little wary of talking about this nerd stuff. And people older than me, I don't really talk to my boss about, not to say that my boss is old. but she's a little older than me.
We'll cut that out.
Yeah.
but yeah, you know, I don't talk to people who are that much older than me about nerd stuff. So I think it's kind of a generational thing for the most part.
I mean, clearly it's how ubiquitous technology has become, and in the same level, the investment movie studios have put into comics and things like that. Because I would say that it's not that... In a way, nerdy, like it's been cooler to become nerdy. It's that they've tried to make nerdy things cool. Right. The most straightforward example to me is the Star Trek movies. Mm-hmm. You know, when you think of The Next Generation or Voyager, whatever, all those old ones, they had this very sci-fi feel. Whereas the new ones with J.J. Abrams, you know, directing and I think writing it, it has an action movie feel that's in the Star Trek universe. And they still do a lot of references, and it is a Star Trek story, but you can tell how they're trying to court both audiences.
Yeah, and that's a good point. So, you know, when I just said a second ago, I don't talk to people older than my generation about nerd stuff, I was thinking specifically games and, you know, tabletop or video games. But you're right, comic books and some of these other genres that are, you know, in the nerd realm, those are a lot more mainstream and a lot more acceptable. You know, my boss will come in other people that I work with that are older, they'll come in and start talking about, you know, the Avengers movie because they go see it with their 12-year-old kid or something like that.
Well, so. I mean, even if you look at two of the biggest shows on TV right now are Walking Dead and Game of Thrones, right?
Yeah.
I feel like 20 years ago growing up, there's no way in hell either of those would have been made.
So I think one other element to me is, and this might offend some people, but I think sci-fi for so long always had a strong cheesy element, the campiness that was in sci-fi. And so it was really hard to get people...
You're offending
to
me go, right now.
I'm deeply offended.
Yeah. it's hard to get people to get into sci-fi for a number of reasons. And maybe, you know, some people might say they diluted it a bit. But there is a feeling like I think there is stronger writing in sci-fi and there's less of we need to have, you know, this really techie kind of show. A perfect example is Battlestar Galactica. I mean, when the story goes, when they tried to make the show, they tried to do it in a more gritty and realistic way. And Edward James Olmos, who's arguably the most famous actor on the show, specifically said he wouldn't sign on to it if there were any aliens or technobabble. And a lot of people, it ended up being a kind of a crossover hit where a lot of people felt like, which I agree with, it's more of a drama set in space. It's not a completely...
Yeah, I would argue that, and, you know, clearly, yes, so aliens and technobabble are a big part of some of the more traditional science fiction pieces out there, but I would argue that science fiction and fantasy, they've always been about story, like personal connections and how humans relate to maybe technology to use that as a mirror to talk about, you know, what it means to be human, that sort of thing.
That's
so true. But you bring up a good point. You know, what do we mean when we say nerd?
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. Like, so how do we redefine
the You've been word. Subconsciously basically saying that nerd equates to scientific techno babble.
Yeah.
Right? So what do we mean when we say nerd?
So I'm very open about being a nerd now. Like, I just do not care what people think of me. Like, I openly talk about Dungeons & Dragons, you know, to really whoever wants to listen to me. We actually are going to be releasing our Dungeons & Dragons sessions as a podcast coming up. You know, I've gotten more and more into board games. I've always been into video games. And, I mean, even just looking through Instagram now, like, people... Even just look at like Call of Duty, for example. I mean, like, everybody plays Call of Duty, everybody plays Madden, like, everybody plays these certain types of video games.
Yeah.
Whereas growing up, you know, those same types of games most people wouldn't admit to playing.
Yeah, I mean, my favorite thing is seeing professional football and basketball players.
Yeah, because, yeah,
you know, on one end you're thinking LeBron is the coolest guy, literally he embodies cool, and he's like, yeah, I'm sitting back playing, you know, Advanced Warfare.
Yeah.
It just, but, you know, it's funny because growing up, my the way I envisaged nerds was, you know, I thought of, you know, growing up with Doom and Quake, I thought of John Romero at QuakeCon and long hair. And and a lot of, when, you know, when computing, I mean, okay, this wasn't
He's
the startup community.
He's going to make you his bitch.
But when, you know, personal computing was getting popular in LANs and stuff like that early on, I mean, it was a lot of the people, I mean, the people who use BBS were nerds, what you think of nerds.
Mm.
Whereas
yeah.
now I feel like I see Twitch streamers and... much to my relief, a lot of them seem like just normal people that also play video games. But
and I agree with that to a degree. I'm going to walk it back though and say, you know, LeBron James playing Modern Warfare or Call of Duty, whatever. I think, you know, yes, games have made it out of the shadows into the mainstream, so that's less nerdy. But there's still nerd types of games, right?
Sure.
Like, if he said he was playing, playing an MMO or an RPG or something like that, I think I know
you
what I meant to say.
You just invented a new genre of game.
I know what I meant to say. I didn't say it at all.
So do we have to redefine what this means now, or is it
it's a moving target, I guess.
I mean, look at like shows like Big Bang Theory now have made it almost socially acceptable to be labeled. In my opinion, I mean, it's made it. I don't know.
I have several opinions on Big Bang Theory.
I don't know if we have time for that.
Yeah, yeah.
I know. I know what you're saying though, and yeah, maybe it's expanded, but it's also a question of how much do people care? Like, just as a side note, you know, you were talking about MMOs. I clearly remember reading that. Who is that woman? She was on, oh man, there was some girl who was a model who was on a TV show with one of the Bradys or something like that. And she plays WoW. And yeah, she's a model. You know, it's not just, oh, you know, it just seems like an area that would never even interact with them.
Yeah.
And so...
So when LeBron James starts playing WoW, then we'll have to redefine nerd. But I've kind of internalized this definition of nerd, and I think you were dancing around it. I don't know if I shared this definition with you. I think I've shared it with Rob before. But like when I think of nerd, I think of specifically something to do with science, some science or technology proficiency and or interest, right? So when I think of geek, I think of somebody who is very into a topic, right? So you can have a history geek,
sure,
and you can have a science, sure, geek, yeah, but the science geek would potentially also be a nerd, right? So if you're into, like, you can geek out about, let's say, Star Wars, but Star Wars is more like fantasy and space. And so some people might call it science fiction, but if you break it down, they don't really do the technobabble piece of it. They do kind of have alien cultures and stuff like that, but it's more mysticism. So it's kind of that gray area, right? And then the dork piece I would throw in.
Oh, hold on. You're throwing in a whole other level here.
Well, it's this triangle, sure, right? And so they all kind of borrow from each other. But dorks would have some socially awkward aspect, right? So just the fact that I defined all those things makes me a nerd, right? Because I'm thinking from a technical aspect, let me categorize, let me analyze, let me figure out how things work, right? So that's definitely my nerdy bent. And that also means that I'm more likely to use a pocket protector, and I'm more likely to wear glasses, and I was more likely to get made fun of on the playground, which is all true.
There you go. Well, so you've heard from us.
So that's
heard,
my nerd cred.
You've heard Josiah's definitions of this. If you have any opposing definitions, definitely leave it in the comments because we'd love to hear this.
And the funny thing is I've seen this talked about like by celebrities in different interviews and stuff like that. And some people out there have exactly the same definitions but switched for geek and nerd. Like they will say that the geeks are more like the science-y, math-type people, technical type people, and nerds are like they just get excited about something. Well, and
those
really
people
dig in.
Those people are clearly the dorks then.
Yeah, clearly.
So maybe I want to get you to draw this diagram at some point, but anyway, we have to move on, so let's move on to our second topic, Josiah.
Oh, so second topic, speaking of nerds and numbers and all that good stuff, I just want to talk about the Apple earnings call to bring some tech in here. So
sold a lot of apples.
It's a whole heck of a lot of apples. And you know, I'm not a stock analyst or anything like that. And so I just want to go through some of these numbers because they're impressive, even if you're not looking to invest in the stock market or anything like that. So 74 million, almost 75 million iPhones sold in quarter one 2015, right? That's, I haven't seen documentation on this, but I heard some people on another podcast I listened to say that that is either more or almost equal to the number of computers, PCs, sold in that same quarter.
Wait, so quarter 1 2015 or quarter 4?
Quarter 1 2015. Okay, that's a report.
Got it.
Right. So all that, you take all the computers sold in that same time period, doesn't matter who made it, Lenovo, HP, Dell, whatever, and that equals roughly the amount of iPhones sold in that same time.
I am part of that problem.
That's insane.
And,
right?
You know, you think about it and you understand it. It's understandable because smartphones have totally compressed the upgrade cycle. Yeah. I mean, most people still have their laptops for at least 2 to 3 years. A lot of people, 5, 7, 10 years.
And to piggyback off of that, they did see that iPads are starting to, growth is starting to slow. Right. And one hypothesis out there is that it's more of a laptop replacement cycle versus the smartphones, because of the incentivization by 2-year contracts, we're very we fell into that conditioning where, okay, it's 2 years and I need a new phone. Because I've met people who still have an iPhone 4 and the battery's good. right? The battery, I know the battery can go in, you know, roughly 2 years, but it doesn't always go in 2 years, depending on how you use it. So
I mean, Paul Steller, friend of the show, is still on an iPhone 4 or 4S? I mean, yeah. We all make fun of him daily for it, because clearly we...
Actually, I don't think I made fun of you yet today, so... but we fell into that replacement cycle, I think, because of the contracts that we're on, and we don't have a contract for laptops.
So how often do you upgrade your phones currently?
I'll admit that I fall into the 2 year product cycle. I've been on this is my third upgrade of iPhone. So I started with the 3GS, I went to the 4S, and I'm on the 5S.
You always go on the
I usually go on the
model.
S models. Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. So I'll get the 6S, I'm pretty sure. And you know, it's partly because I want the shiny newness.
Sure, absolutely.
I mean, I've actually gotten even shorter than that. One tiny advantage of Android is that there's just a bevy of devices. I mean,
right.
That's a good thing and a bad thing. But so I bought a new phone on contract maybe 2.5 to 3 years ago. And then I bought a new phone off contract for pretty cheap like 6 months ago. And I'm probably going to sell that phone and buy a new phone pretty soon.
Wow.
But see, the thing is,
you got it off of Craigslist and you got
a
deal for it.
Well, so that's a funny thing. So, okay, I'll just say the one I was looking at right now is an LG G2. So it has a lot of good things about it. And the funny thing is, it has a Snapdragon 800 processor, despite being made in 2013, which, for anyone who doesn't know, that's pretty close to the latest ones. I mean, the newest ones are 805 and 810. It's not a huge jump. And I can get this phone for like $150.
Yeah.
So, and I'm not paying the subsidy fee because AT&T changed the way their plans work. So for me, upgrading, I can do it sooner. I mean, I'm always a number of steps behind, but I don't mind it because I can change it. And I'm literally just trading phones. I have a Moto X 2013 right now.
Yeah.
I could sell it for about $150, get the G2, which is a significantly better phone.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've kind of compressed it even more. But I have more variability. If I find a phone that I really want, you spend $600 on it, I'm probably going to keep it for a decent amount of time.
Sure.
Or sell
it.
I mean, I don't know.
So other numbers, again, I won't dive too deeply into this, but revenue, total revenue for that quarter, $74.6
billion. That is
so
ridiculous.
With a B.
So,
billion.
TechCrunch reported that is actually the highest revenue quarter of any company in history.
Yeah.
Gazprom
insane.
Used to have the highest. And it's funny because if you look through the list, Apple is still, they have number one and they have number three. And it's funny when you look at the revenue charts, there was a dip in the maybe past couple quarters. Obviously, it's going to happen, you know, when the new iPhone comes out, there's going to be a spike. But, I mean, there were some analysts thinking that Apple had hit their peak at the, you know,
4S and
5.
That's something I wanted to talk about a little bit is that, you know, people for several quarters now have been saying, somewhat catalyzed by Steve Jobs passing and Tim Cook taking over. But, you know, has Apple lost its mojo? Are they going to fail? And people, you know, start this doom drum that they're trying to, basically say that Apple's out off its game. And here they, you know, just a simple little thing. I say simple in air quotes, but, you know, simple thing of releasing larger screens and they're back on top.
Do you think that's why there's less laptops now? Because their phones are getting as big as them?
Probably. I mean, people have said, and I think it makes perfect sense, that it will, to a degree, cannibalize the iPad mini sales. Because,
yeah.
I mean, an iPhone 6 Plus is not that far from
Tim Cook actually mentioned that. He said, you know, there might be some cannibalization there, and it might be going into iPad sales and stuff
that.
But whatever, an iPad mini is, what, $300 to $500?
Yeah.
An iPad 6 Plus, at minimum, is, what, $700 to $800?
I think it's, yeah.
And that's, and I read, I mean, so one problem is Apple does not, I mean, problem, they can do whatever they want, but they don't break down specific sales, so we don't know how many iPhone 6 Plus.
Their entire sales are from the iPod.
Yeah, the last one just sold out.
Well, they did say almost 70% of their revenue that quarter was from iPhone.
Yeah,
and they don't break it out, but
too.
Yeah.
The iPhones have pretty been their, you know, golden goose, golden egg.
Just a quick FYI. So this is I just looked it up. NASA's budget. last year was $17 billion, right? So how many NASAs like can five. Apple a run in Apple? Just one quarter? Or
sorry. It's five, right?
Yeah, that's not a third of an Apple. No.
So just last quarter, they could have funded five NASAs in just one quarter. That's insane.
So just going back to that, the conversation about screens, though, because I was one of the people that bought an iPhone at the end of the last year, right? And I don't know that I would have switched had they not gotten a bigger screen with their main model. That said, the Plus is absolutely absurdly big for me. But, you know, if they had stuck with the same size as previous models, I don't know that I would have switched over.
And I think one other thing that helped them was, I mean, it's, in my opinion, crappy for customers, but the idea is their lowest end model was 16 gig. Their next step up was 64. And I think a lot of people are starting to realize 16 isn't enough.
No.
But if the next step up is 64.
I was not happy about that.
Yeah, that's like basic marketing 101. You have that loss leader, you know, that convinces people to upsell. And, you know, they do that in with TVs all the time. They put the really cheap, crappy version there, and then they have this really nice luxury version that's, you know, has a much higher profit margin for them. But so the larger screen, and the other big reason I think that they have much more sales. So they're kind of reporting this as a preview. People were speculating on this. They didn't quite hit it, but China. So sales in China almost surpassed sales in the U.S. It's I'm like 99% sure it's going to happen next quarter. And so I think the larger phones, because phablet size phones and larger screen phones are much more popular in Asia. And so I think that helped. But the other big thing is that Tim Cook negotiated that deal with China Mobile, which is the largest carrier in China. And they had some PR, what could have been huge PR mishaps during this year, but, you know, very in tune to the culture. Tim Cook, like the top of, you know, the food chain at Apple, personally wrote apologies that were published in the media, and he followed that Asian culture, that Chinese culture piece of saving face and you know, making those public apologies, that sort of thing. So I'm basically saying, you know, Tim Cook, he's his own man, and, you know, this big result, obviously he's working off the shoulders of giants, you know, the foundation built by the team coming before him, and some of that team is still part of his team, but I think he's really made this his year, at least this quarter.
this last month was hit.
Well, I mean, no, I know it's nuts, right? Like, it is. This is, I mean, these is are Tim direct Cook's things. So Steve Jobs, who knows what he would have changed his mind or not, but he, before he passed away, he clearly said, you don't need a bigger phone than the 5, the Apple
There
the
are
iPhone
a lot
5.
Of things. I mean,
so I know he flip-flops and he makes it sound like what he's saying right there is the gospel truth. But, you know, before he passed, he did say, you don't need a bigger phone. And two things he did, Tim Cook did, make that bigger phone, and he sealed the deal with China Mobile after that was on the plate for many years.
And the funny thing about the Chinese market, I think early on people assumed, especially since it was just a growing market, that they might not invest in Apple products as much, because when you have competitors like Xiaomi and OnePlus One making these really cheap products that are good, you would think they'd go for it. And they have been doing well, but there is clearly the Chinese market has shown that they want premium name brand products. There is enough of a middle class and definitely enough of an upper class that will go for these high-end premium products. And some of this, like, it almost disappoints me that some of Apple's success, not completely, and not to go into this all the way, but it's also a function of, I don't think the competitors have proven why, if you want the most premium device, this is why you go for something else. Like, you don't, rarely do you see, you know, celebrities and, you know, a lot of rich people using anything other than an iPhone. And I don't mean to discount what Apple has done, but really, their biggest thing was just making two bigger versions.
So, so a couple points to wrap this up related to what you're just saying. They also announced that they have shipped in total since its release. What was it? The original iPhone was 2007, I think.
2007.
So since 2007 and the dawn of iOS, they have now shipped 1 billion iOS devices.
I was
right?
So close to being that 1 billion.
So that's... That is potentially, if you distribute it evenly across the planet, that's one out of every six people would have an iOS device. And then just to wrap this up, they did mention that the Apple Watch is coming out officially by end of April. So we'll see what that does as a new product line.
All right. Well, let's take a quick break. And so last week we talked about some of the favorite games of last year, but now I wanted to open it up to what your favorite TV series is.
So does this have to be it doesn't on have TV to be
current.
Right now?
It doesn't have to be current.
Okay.
Which this kind of opens up the floodgates.
It has really changed.
You got some splaining to do.
All right. Who wants to kick it off?
Josiah.
More nerd cred. All right. Star Trek Next Generation. I recently, like last year, I went back and watched every single episode again on Netflix. And I can say again because as I was watching it, literally there were maybe two episodes in the first season and one episode in the second season that I did not remember. And that actually shocked me because Star Trek Next Generation premiered when I was still living in Korea. So I did not see the first two seasons. Hmm. But through reruns and stuff like that, once I came back to the States, I basically had seen every single episode. And it just speaks to me. I love space. I love science fiction. But what we were talking about earlier, I love that they show what humanity and potentially aliens could be, right? It's kind of, they're showing a golden age of the human race, how we have triumphed over disease, war, and our social differences. So I get choked up.
Josiah's tearing up as you speak right now.
I have two important questions for you.
Yeah.
One, is Picard your favorite captain?
Captain, my captain. you know, yes, Picard wins, hands down. But kind of what you were saying earlier, like there was a time when a lot of science fiction was very campy, and so
the original
Star Trek, I wouldn't say is super campy, but there was some camp in there and some kitsch.
They also didn't have that many special effects. It was a lot more difficult to do some
right.
of the things.
And less techno babble and that sort of thing. I don't want to take away from Kirk. Captain Kirk is amazing, and he did the groundwork. But Next Generation just really took it to a different level. And Captain Picard, he's amazing. Patrick Stewart, amazing actor.
Yeah, I don't think you
around.
Can go wrong with Patrick Stewart. I don't think. Second question, which is equally as important, is Whoopi Goldberg the best Star Trek actor?
Oh my gosh.
Is that your favorite? Just say
we're
going to yes,
forget
and why is
the
that?
Whoopi Goldberg episode. You know, actually,
that should have been her name in the show. Be like, Whoopi's come. What country or what planet is she from?
So I'm also going to go space. And if you heard last week's episode, you heard Josiah's rant about why he doesn't agree with my decision.
Right, boys in space.
Yes.
Yes.
But I'm going to go with Farscape. I think.
Farscape.
Yeah. I think a time in my life, it was a really big bonding experience with me and my dad when we were watching the show. I've watched the series now, I think, three times through. My brother and I are about to start watching it again. And Sean's laughing at me because he tries to suggest things for me to watch, but I've ignored them to watch Farscape again. But I mean, honestly, like if you look back, I mean, even I think in the first or second episode, when they go to one of the first alien planets, the amount of creatures and species that were created by Jim Henson's group to put on the show is absolutely incredible.
Yeah, no doubt. The work that they did and the diversity in the alien species, the design, it's insane. And I kind of wish that they spent some of that budget on writers.
I didn't start hating on Star Trek.
Maybe even an acting coach for now. But hey. No, I'll admit the first two seasons of Star Trek Next Generation, they had to find themselves and they were trying to throw back to some of the campy.
Farscape wasn't given enough time.
Yeah.
Man. Yeah. Yeah. What was it? Four seasons in a movie?
Four seasons in a movie.
Did you know were the creatures created by Jim Henson's group, or was it the writers that made it up and told Jim Henson's, like, kind of gave them an idea.
Well, it's funny. It's crazy because when they went down on the planet, there was no interaction. It would be just one 5-second shot on the streets, and yeah. there'd be about 2 dozen different species, and they would never show up in this.
It's like the cantina scene in Star Wars.
Yeah.
But that's like a highly produced movie, and this is just like literally 5 seconds in a TV show that, you know, maybe had an audience, a max audience of what, maybe 1 million people? Not a million people on TV. So, yeah, amazing stuff.
If they reboot it, you can be an extra as a random
tech. Oh, my God. I could have been Dargo's son with my dreads a while ago.
That's true. So I'm skirting around sci-fi. And, you know, I'm one of those people who has a really difficult time picking a favorite of all time. So just a show I really like now, Louie. So Louie is by Louis C.K. Nice. And it was originally started as a comedy. And there's definitely a dark comedy element to it. But as he's grown, he's definitely change it up. There's a lot fewer funny moments and more, not thought-provoking, but thoughtful moments. And it's just an incredibly well-made show in that Louis C.K. essentially does whatever he wants, and FX is allowing him to do whatever. And it doesn't turn into, you know, I'm just going to be, you know, say as many swears as I want. He really, he's made a lot of shows that I wouldn't expect to see on TV because it doesn't fit into any niche or anything like that. And it's really hard to describe what he does so well. There's so many. It's kind of an embodiment of his comedy. His comedy is so much of it, simple things in life, but not in the Seinfeld way, but things that happen in your life that he just is able to explain in a funny way and you can really connect to it. But I don't mean it in the Seinfeld way. His is a little bit raunchier, but his show speaks to a lot of that. And he is really good at acting as a regular guy. That's always been his shtick, and he's good at it. And you wouldn't think of him as a good actor, but I mean, he acts, he directs, he writes the whole show. He gets a good number of famous people, but not so much that it detracts from it. And it's a really interesting show, and I haven't seen many like it.
Well,
cool.
We'll have to have him on the show sometime. All right, let's move on to our third topic, Sean.
So what I want to talk about today is platform lock-in. So obviously each ecosystem, Google, the big ones being Google, Apple, and Microsoft, they each have different products that they have out. Like Google has Android, Microsoft has Windows and Windows Phone, Apple has OS X, and then they have iOS. And there's this question of now you come into a situation where people, you know, how difficult is it to have multiple devices from different companies? And also, you know, do you feel like you should stick with one platform? I mean, I don't think it's really uncommon for somebody to say they have an iPad, an Android phone, and a Windows PC or something like that. Yeah. So do you guys feel like it's difficult to switch over? Or
We talked about this a little bit last week, my switch from Windows Phone to an iPhone. And, you know, I remember sitting down with both of you and talking through this, like, moral dilemma.
Counseling, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, I had this weird sense of brand loyalty to Microsoft in general. I mean, I love my Surface, and you know, Windows phones were always, always far behind the competitors, and we never had the apps and things like that. And you know, for whatever bizarre reason, I felt this brand loyalty, and I stuck with it for what, 3 Windows phones, right? And at the end of the day, I'm still hesitant to say I really like my iPhone,
but I really like
the iPhone. But it's, you know, it's, I made the switch. It was just difficult to make that switch, though, over time. And for no real reason, though. I mean, Microsoft has never done anything for me.
That makes total sense. I mean, I could see how it's, you know, but you know, it's funny. Fanboyism has definitely grown as groups have differentiated. And that loyalty, I feel like, has gotten even stronger. So,
yeah, I think as far as the apps go, some of the major apps are either cross-platform or they're cloud-based anyway. So, you know, recently I think one of the bigger holdouts was Microsoft with Office and stuff like that. And that you mentioned that, you know, the Office apps are better on iOS at least right now in this development cycle, and they just released a lot of Office apps for Android recently. So, you know, that piece of it is much easier. Facebook works on everything. You know, Facebook owns the top four mobile apps. It's Facebook Messenger, WhatsApp, and Instagram.
Yeah, that's insane.
I might have the order mixed up, but you know, those are the top four mobile apps. Period. and they're on every platform except for Windows Phone. Some they didn't have a native Instagram.
They do now, I think. Okay. That said, the third party apps were better than the first party ones.
So, you know, overall it is relatively easy to switch. I remember when I bought my iPhone 3GS and I was looking at, you know, at, you have to think about the landscape back then. I was thinking about BlackBerry versus iOS, and I said, you know, I'm going to go with iOS and that's it. I'm going to keep this phone and I'm going to start buying music on iTunes and stuff like that, and this is going to be my platform for the majority of my life, right? Until something new replaces smartphones, period. I get a chip implanted in my brain or something. So with that said, you know, that was my mentality, or that's the way I planned, and because I didn't want to disappoint myself and have all these sunk costs of switching platforms. So I basically said to myself, I'm aware of the lock-in price, and I'm okay with that. But now I have all my music in, you know, I stream my music. I don't have any music downloaded to my phone, that sort of thing. So it'd be very easy to pick up and move, assuming that, you know, 80-90% of the apps that I want to use anyway are going to be cross-platform. The main thing that's different for me is just the learning curve, you know, for the new OS. And this is just me in particular. I don't like to learn highly specified user interfaces, right? So like Cyanogen, I know it's got good reviews and stuff like that, but I would not want to learn Cyanogen because it's not stock, right? So I want the default. Like, you know, I don't want to learn. I guess a better example would be Samsung, right? With their SenseUI, TouchWiz. Sorry, I don't want to learn all their extra specific crap because I just want to learn what is the platform. The platform is Android, so I want to learn stock Android and figure out how that works. Or with iOS, I don't even have that problem. It's like there's a handful, maybe four or five differences between the iPad versus an iPhone based on the screen size, but everything else is the same.
Which is what Windows 10 is trying to do with their mobile platforms.
Yeah, that's so a good point.
It's interesting you bring that up, though. So I think the ecosystem has become more important than the actual platform for me, or the services, rather, that you use, right? So my biggest thing from switching is that I have 2 years left of my subscription to Xbox Music.
Yeah.
And I do genuinely like that service, and it's just a subpar app on the iPhone. So that's been my biggest gripe about switching. But to your point, I mean, if you start going with these other non-platform specific services that have apps universally anyway, then it makes it a lot easier to switch.
Yeah, or you can find a substitute for that. You know, okay, I can't find the exact app that I use for scanning documents on my phone, but Android has a host of those, and same app for, you know, maybe a different app for note taking or something. But there's always a host of those. What I will say, so in December, I was looking at the new iPhones. I knew I was not going to buy one because it's not my upcycle time. But so I looked at the Android devices, so like the M1 or M8, and I looked at the Moto X, and I looked at the iPhone 6 and 6 Plus. So I picked them up, and I can figure them out, and just messed around with them in the store. I picked up a BlackBerry Passport. I opened up a program, and, you know, I teach people how to use technology. I really am in tuned into looking for design cues and language about how apps work.
Yeah.
I literally could not figure out. I accidentally turned on like their voice assistant, and
it's
couldn't.
Like sticky keys.
Yeah, I could not. You know, like their version of Siri or Cortana. I could not turn it off. Like I literally had to turn the phone off to get out of that voice assistant screen. It was so bizarre to me. I'm like, I don't know how to cancel this. I don't want to talk to you, phone. I just want to look at the app screen, the home screens. I couldn't figure it out. So,
well, yeah, BlackBerry 10 is heavily swipe-based. I mean, I don't think there are any actual hardware buttons aside from, you know, the keyboard and things like that. So that makes it...
So that kind of design language is definitely... It's not interesting to me anymore.
I think... it's one of those things that I guess if you start knowing it, it can work. But it is difficult to just jump into a phone. And, you know, it's funny. You know, you talked about how different Android devices are. And it's really funny. So the most, you know, the tech crowd will always say, you know, why aren't more phones on stock Android? It is the best version, and I'm totally in this camp, that it's the cleanest version and all these reasons. But it's funny because one major advantage of having all these skins is they avoid the situation that Windows Phone had, where Windows Phone, you would think the positive thing is, regardless of phone, you have a good experience. It's always fast. It's always the same interface. I mean, you get very little differentiation other than hardware. But then you come into a situation, even Rob, you had this problem. People say, well, why do I want to upgrade? Or you start feeling that all the phones are the same. And by having these different skins, even though this was not the intention of having these skins was so people will build brand loyalty, it ends up creating this pseudo-diversity because people think an HTC phone is way different than a Samsung phone. And I will say, you know, I really don't like TouchWiz, at least the last iteration I tried, but I've definitely met people who are strong supporters of it, and not tech people. People are just like, oh, I really like that it has giant buttons, and when I go to the toggles, there's 30 of them because I really need to switch from 2G, have another button for 3G, another one for 4G, and one for my camera shutter speed, you know, under whatever. So it's created a weird, even this spec war has created this level of diversity that I think has helped. And you kind of see it that the Moto X has not sold well at all, and it's the one of the few stock Android ones. I mean, part of it, you can name other things happening, but I think there are people who really like TouchWiz, and they think or they feel like there are distinct advantages. Like, I might switch to an HTC phone because they don't.
Yeah, and I think the Google Play editions of some of these other phones, like, I think that program is kind of falling by the wayside.
Yeah, and a part of it is Google's fault. I mean, they have a lot of different issues. But yeah, I mean, they also didn't really sell that well. I mean, granted, their argument for Nexus phones where they were always developer machines and something like that, but it seems silly. I mean, to me, the Nexus device was always supposed to be the one way you could get stock Android. You don't have to go through a carrier, wait for the updates, or deal with all those other issues. But but, you know, there's just not nearly as much demand. And it's funny because you think of Windows. I mean, Apple has always been different because they've always had end-to-end. They always had, you know, the hardware and the software. Windows, I mean, Microsoft never really made their hardware. But Windows is the same from every machine to every machine. So, I mean, yeah, they add on, you know, one has McAfee and one has Norton. Yeah, yeah. But generally, it's the same thing. Whereas Android, it's just gone a different path in that literally they've tried to take ownership of each phone.
I mean, it's more like the Linux model, right, where you have you have Red Hat, you have
Ubuntu, versus
So I just, like I said, my bias is I don't want to learn a niche way of doing things. I want to learn the default or the base layer of things, and so I don't have to worry about all that diversity with iOS. I don't know, that's probably not what
you like to keep it one color.
Yeah.
You just don't want to accept other people. Was it? Oh, no. Be together, not be different. Oh, Google put out the new ad campaign. I don't even remember it because it's like an awkwardly written. Although I actually read a number of people who really liked it, and I thought it was kind of cool. I can't even remember what it is. But one thing I wanted to say is, it's funny. You know, you mentioned this point that you don't want to try out new things, and I think this is
I don't want to spend a lot of time learning something that is a very small percentage of user base. Because, you know, again, my job is to teach people technology, and I want to have a lot of bang for my buck. I want to have, you know, I'll spend time to learn something, but it's got to be used by several different types of people for it to be interesting to me. So, you know, specifically, I teach people how to use technology in education, right? So iOS is the dominant player as far as tablets go. And if people are buying Android tablets, they're not buying TouchWiz Samsung, they're buying Nexus devices. So that's why I want to learn stock Android, or I'd take the time to learn stock Android, but I'm not going to learn Samsung. I'm not going to learn these other things because I already said, I chose to lock myself personally into iOS. And then for my job purposes, I don't need to learn, you know, HTC or Samsung or CyanogenMod's flavor of Android.
Well, the reason why I wanted to bring it up is because I think generally people feel like, especially with technology, you know, most of the time people just want it to work. And I remember growing up, I had so many people who would say, you know, I've never used a Mac because I don't know how to use it.
I still haven't. I have no idea how to
use it. Well, but it's so funny. And I've always thought that most of them, I mean, yes, OS X, and they are different than Windows, but it's not inscrutable. It's not this ridiculously complex system. Even Linux is pretty, is very easy to use unless you're using like Crunchbang or something like that. But I have had so many friends, family who have transitioned over to MacBooks. And mm-hmm. there was never a question of, oh, am I going to know how to use this? And you start realizing that if people really want a device, they'll figure out how to learn it, especially because it's really not that difficult.
Yeah, but, that's true. You know, that's a good point.
Not too long ago, people would not even think about an Apple device.
Yeah.
And now everyone I know has a MacBook or an iPhone, so...
That's true. All right.
You're next, Rob.
I don't think so. I love my Surface too much. All right. So that is going to do it for this week's episode of The Unwind. We want to thank you very much for listening. And you can subscribe to us on the iTunes.
The iTunes.
So definitely be sure to leave your comments. You can leave those at commentistblock.com. commentistblock. .com. We should have picked a shorter name.
Shorter name that's easier to spell.
Yes, but
we like to do things the hard way.
Yeah, leave us your questions, comments, if you have any other opinions that we haven't touched on, and we'll see you next week.
Peace.